Take Hits Comics back again. I'm Andrew Farmer.
Again?
Again. Back again. Again. I'm Andrew Farmer. Cole Houston is with me as always.
Naturally.
We are exhausted. We have been, this is the show before Alcon. And if you listen to any show we've done, the show before Alcon, we are just floating in the ether somewhere usually. So forgive us.
So much so that we didn't even mention up until this point the issue number. This is 127.
There you go, 127. And we are at the end of a story arc called The Superhuman Condition that Cole came up with in a fevered rage. Because he couldn't fly. And he keeps trying every year about this time, and it just doesn't work. So what's the title of this one?
Flying Ain't Flying, man.
Flying Ain't Flying.
This is The Superhuman Condition. This is the fifth and final part of The Superhuman Condition.
Nice.
And this is The Gods Themselves.
Absolutely.
And this is where we take the human out of the equation and just go all super.
No human, all super. This has been a really fun arc. It was nice to get back to a little of the more cerebral stuff. Now, if I mistake me if I'm wrong, but next week we should, it might be a little late, but we should have an Alcon edition of Hey Kids Comics.
Yes.
Okay.
We're going to do our dead level best to have something to do with Alcon, even if it's post facto or even during the show, depending on our particular capabilities.
Right, so we'll have something for you from Alcon. It's going to be a busy weekend, and again, if you are in the Dallas-Fort Worth area, please do yourself a favor. Come out to Addison, come to the Crown Plaza, come to Alcon. Thursday's free. The next 3 days are awesome.
It's worth the price of admission. I think it's like $50 for the weekend.
$50 for the weekend.
I mean, there are some shows here locally that are $50 for a day, and they don't offer you 3% of what Alcon is giving
over 300 events in one weekend. Yeah. Over 300 events in one weekend. That's insane.
You can't do it all.
You can't.
But you ought to do anything we're involved with.
There's a lot of really good stuff out there. I think Cole was saying that Games in Theory has, 31 different possible game show chances for you to be in a game show or witness a game show or see something going on there. Friends of the show, Starman and Rick Gutierrez from United States of Geekdom, and Taffeta Darling from Dames of the Roundtable, and the list goes on and on. Paige and Schmalz, everybody has panels. The panels, by and large, and I think completely free with the price of admission.
There's almost nothing you have to buy in a secondary way. The burlesque costs extra.
Yes.
Things like the Rocky Horror Picture Show, Shadowcast.
Right.
Is covered in your admission price. The
which is worth it every year.
Yes. There's the Moulin Rouge Shadowcast is back this year. There's just all kinds of things to do. Lots of panels, workshops, learn how to do things. Hear from people who have done things. There are 19 game shows, an unprecedented new volume of game shows for Alcon.
Awesome. That's insane.
We have never had that many shows.
I'm going to be in pain. We're all going to be they're going to wheel us out at the end. But anyway, back to the show. We'll talk about Alcon. You'll get an earful soon enough. But back to the show. Yeah, so the last four issues we've covered, you know, your crazy ass guys that go out and just fight crime. We've covered your guys that rely as much on technology and magic as themselves. The third issue, we got Mutants, I believe, was the third.
Mutants or the Mutated.
Right, and then the fourth.
As it were.
The fourth was Alien.
So you come from a distant world, and somehow that makes you better than everybody else.
And now we get to my favorite, if you're a fan of you know, studying narrative, if you ever took narrative studies in college, the other, the outsider, the ultimate outsider. What happens when you invite, guess who's coming to dinner, but instead of Sidney Poitier?
Yeah, it's like
it's Bahamut,
Zeus or something. Yeah. Bahamut.
I don't know. It's Mazda. Mazda shows up for dinner. The gods themselves here. And you know what's funny is, and I think a lot of it has to do business-wise with the fact that a lot of it is kind of open license. You get a lot of gods in comics from Jump Street in comic books. You had a lot of.
Oh yeah, well, part of it is, you know, you can't get more public domain.
Right.
Than things that belong quite literally to the ages. And it turns out the ages just don't have good representation.
They need an ages agent.
The ages have never successfully sued anyone.
They should get on that. Caveman lawyer needs to come back and
exactly. You know, antediluvian lawyer law the this antediluvian law firm to come in and.
All right, so put this down for our YouTube channel, Cole. I want to do the ages agent. I want to do a law firm based on representing, you know, classic characters from the ages from different time periods.
Have the actual Thor with that funky hammer that you only get a picture of.
Right.
In the movie, you know, where it's that weird ass. Looks almost more like an axe than a hammer.
And he could be suing Marvel for libel or slander. Yeah. See, it's going to be like one of those ABC law shows, but it'll be, you know, this instead. So just back burner that for the YouTube channel. We'll get to work on that right after Hulk. but yeah, so you had Thor and you have Hercules. Marvel really latched on to the idea of a god very early on and just has continued to run with it pretty much across the board. Just pretty much across the board. I mean, you have Thor in the Avengers as one of, you know, because comics, we've talked about this before, but the history of comics really didn't come into the idea of, you know, the superhero comic until probably the second act of the comic book story. So the first act was your pulp and your weird and your crime and your romance and your war stories, you know, and then your second act was really extra human heavy. And it's always been interesting to me to see how the gods in comics have evolved through the ages, like, you know, from the outsider like Thor has evolved from being when the Avengers started and as they really started to explore storyline, you know, and in character outside of just, you know, your monster of the month.
Yeah.
Smash him up. Because the first, you know, what got the Avengers together was God pitted against God, was brother against brother, was Thor and Loki.
He's adopted.
You're not my real dad. But
I just want to, you know, create some controversy.
But it begs the question, and as we get going, how does it affect the God, and how does it affect, you know, who the supporting God cast, as it were, when you introduce a god-level character into your comic book universe?
Absolutely, and how do they successfully or poorly interact with their human counterparts? You know, it's easy to get a god complex when you're a superhero, but what if you're a god? It's already built in.
It is.
It'd be like having just a complex.
Exactly. It's like a Texas Roadhouse.
Yeah.
What do they call Texas Roadhouse in Texas? So they just call it Roadhouse.
That's right.
Roadhouse. But yeah, I liked watching the evolution of Thor, and Thor was never, and the superpower, I should be, you know, intellectually honest and say the last two issues, when we start talking about Thor and Superman and the Hulk and Hyperion and all of those type characters, never interested me much.
Yeah.
Because they are so super powerful, there's never really a challenge. And the reason that I like Thor more than most is because the challenge that they've willingly accepted when writing Thor, creating Thor, is introducing him to humanity and introducing humanity to the character. And
yes.
I feel like they failed a lot. They overextended on Superman in a lot of cases with that, but Thor, I think a lot of times they nail it on the head.
Yeah, I think with Thor, there was a better vehicle because he was a character of mythos that most people were unfamiliar with.
Right.
I mean, really, outside of the comics, that's the reason we even know that, you know, there was a Norse pantheon.
True. That's true.
You know, if you weren't, like, years later into D&D or something.
I wonder how heavily, so there, you know, it's been used, it's a trope that's been used a lot in literature and TV, and that the gods don't, you know, the old gods went away. Neil Gaiman did it beautifully in American Gods. The gods go away because you stop believing in them.
Yeah.
You know, so the North Pantheon all but is, you know, non-existent now, or the Greek Pantheon, or the, you know, the Aztec Pantheon, whatever Pantheon.
Yeah, the Aztecs really didn't get much coverage
for
a long ass time.
But, you know, so how heavily invested are the Greeks, let's say the Greeks and Warner Brothers, and then the Norse god, you know, if they do exist, how heavily invested are they in the opposing big two comic book companies? Just so they could keep going. Like, okay, people know who Thor is, and Odin is, and Loki is, and, you know, Jotunheim and Fafnir, and okay, so let's cut them another check for $1 million, $2 million, $3 million this month, and we can keep on going. Because you're right, nobody knew. The Greeks are a little different. You know, the Greeks, I think, were more well-known than the Norse Pantheon. And DC has always used the Greek Pantheon, I would say, to their, you know, to its fullest.
It's been interwoven, I think, even more so than in the Marvel Universe, directly into their Pantheon, especially with, you know, Wonder Woman. And depending on the writer and depending on the period, there's tremendous interaction.
Yeah, I mean, well, you have, like, Ares.
Not just the throwback to, you know, Themyscira being kind of like this town that time forgot.
Right.
Since antiquity, but more that, you know, they're not just, like, worshipping the old gods. The old gods are coming and dropping by and wreaking havoc and...
Right.
Or helping out as may suit them.
So why, let me ask this question of you. Why do they do that? Why? And I mean, you know, we know classically why. Is it, yeah. does the song remain the same now? Like, because if you read any Greek mythology, if you read, you know, the Odyssey or the Iliad or Homer or Plato, I'm not familiar, or nor do I read ancient Norse or Celtic writings, but I imagine
it's the same. Plato, but sometimes it's a bit salty.
Oh, yeah, it is. But, you know, oddly enough, green, sweet, sweet.
Really? I never realized that. I was so put off by the time I went to the yellow and the blue that I never got to the green.
You chase it with some paste. It's
green. Oh, okay.
Yeah, you gotta, I mean, you gotta palate cleanse in between with some Elmers. But you know, the Greeks always, you know, the Greek gods are always coming down messing with stuff. Zeus was coming down as an eagle with a wiener and impregnating people, and, you know, whatever they had in mind to do. Why are they doing it if, in the world of comic books, if in whatever universe you live in, you've got your Supermans, you've got your Iron Mans, your Captain Americas, you've got your Namors or you know, your Mr. Fantastics, why bother?
I guess is my question. Part of it is, yeah, because traditionally when you look at these pantheon, they're interacting with their worshippers. They're interacting with the, you know, in many cases, essentially their creations.
Right, right.
Until their creations decide, no, you aren't the one that created me.
Right.
And what you have at work here is, I think that really it could be that there's just nothing to do. I mean, look at it from the standpoint of, like, the computer, the memory banks and the... When you look at Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy, and they go to Magrathea, and they get attacked by the, you know, they have the rockets fired at them, and Slard of Artfast explains that the you know, the eons weigh heavily on their memory banks. And I think, you know, when you think of these immortal characters who live in another realm,
right?
They're all, you know, inevitably needing to. If, you know, you think Americans have a overly inflated necessity of, you know,
right,
being justified. I mean, like, if you watch Birdman, that's what it was all about, is the sense of needing to justify your very existence, which has become inflated in the modern world.
Oh, yes.
But imagine how inflated that necessity, that need becomes when there's no other reason for you to exist. Your purposes have all departed.
But here's the problem with that is, it's not like they're dead.
Yeah.
You know, it's not like they disappeared. They're all still there. You can see, if you're a god, you can see them. They just stopped believing in you.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah, you watched them move on, and, you know, you watched the Egyptians stop building pyramids and start building hotels. You watched you know, the end of the long ship,
right?
And discovering new lands, and then just sort of not bothering to go back in favor of building hotels and.
And that has to be frustrating, because there's one thing, and I'm sure that somebody like Alan Moore has explored this, but you've got
and if he hasn't, he will.
Right, you've got Thor, you've got Hercules. Heracles. You've got if you're pretentious, if you're fancy,
if you're a pedant,
if you've got. The Greek gods, even, you know, on the Marvel side, yes, but especially on the DC side, you've got these things. You've got Odin, you've got Loki, you've got the manifesting on Earth. You know,
yes.
YouTube. You know, you can't even make money off of appearances of gods on Earth anymore, because you know it's so prevalent. You can't sell that to TMZ anymore. How frustrating is it, or why hasn't it been explored that these guys don't have followers anymore? Like, they're there. You can see, you know, the argument for God not existing, you know, for a lot of atheists, and I'm not getting into a theological argument here, is that you can't see it. You need tactile evidence of that. And yeah, then I'll believe there's a God. You're seeing them. They're right there. They're on the 10 o'clock news. They're walking into your coffee shop or your shawarma place. Why aren't there Norse followers at this point, like on Earth?
Yeah, exactly. And why haven't, you know, why didn't that? And I think to some degree it's been explored a bit here and there. You know, why hasn't their return sparked a return in the mysteries of their personal religions?
Exactly. That's my thing. So who's your favorite representation of a comic book god?
Wow, that's a tough one. I remember really enjoying, even though it was kind of, technically it was not a very good story, but it was kind of a fun, you know, hero's journey type of thing with the Hercules or the baby face Bob Layton Hercules miniseries. Because amongst other things, you know, they did some very Herculean things, like, you know, drinking Galactus under the table to save a planet he was going to devour.
Right.
And, you know, at the end when, you know, they thought he was down for the count, and he went, Pastani! Pastani! Oh, wait, no, sorry, that's Raiders of the Lost Ark. But still, you know,
you know, what's funny is the whole story would have been the same even if Hercules wasn't in it.
Yeah, that's so true. But as far as a favorite, because, you know, Thor was a hard sell. I didn't really get into Thor. I picked him up a little bit during the Simonson years. Mm-hmm. When he quit being a god, and he pretty much had abandoned Donald Blake. He decided to take on a civilian persona for some inexplicable reason.
because like I was saying, that was their way of exploring his investment in humanity, right? Like,
yeah,
like that was their hackneyed. Superman walks instead of flies, you know, trading spaces. Dan Aykroyd, Thor moment there, I guess.
Yeah, and the thing about it is, you know, when he took on the, I believe his alter ego was Sigurd Jarlsson. The, you know, that doesn't ring odd to anybody.
Right, everybody's named Sigurd Jarlsson now.
Yeah, however he was, so yeah, he's just like, you know, I'm Sigurd from Norway.
Like, sure you are, Thor. Yeah. All right.
You used to be Thor, but now you're not.
No, oh, damn it. Do it. Just do it. You have to do it.
Thunderstrike.
Thunderstrike. Thunderstrike. Yeah. Thunderstrike was the worst, best representation of Thor ever.
It's hard to say, though, which was a favorite god, because I really wasn't into the godhead type. But I did enjoy when Michael Rucka, is that right, was...
what was he... Greg Rucka?
Oh, that's right. Yeah, Greg Rucka.
I think you're thinking of Michael Rooker. You're combining Michael Rooker.
No, it's, that's it. Yeah, Greg Rucka. When he during his tenure on Wonder Woman, I think that was the best representation of gods in a modern
setting.
Era, because some of them were still kind of Toga! Toga! For, like, you know, Ares. Or we're dressing in, like, nice suit and tie.
Right. Like, Go ahead. I'm sorry, man.
But actually, I can tell you precisely which was my favorite representation of the Greek pantheon, or indeed any pantheon. But it was a title we're going to bring up in a future episode titled "The House of Obscurity."
Right.
But Eddie Campbell, who drew From Hell, who collaborated with Alan Moore on that title.
Okay.
Had this very obscure, almost no one's ever heard of it, title called Dead Face.
Well, I haven't heard of it.
Yeah, and Dead Face was the story of the god Bacchus.
Okay.
He came down from Olympus and just kind of hung out on the Greek Isles and just enjoyed the hell of it himself. And winds up interacting with Theseus. The hero Theseus, who was a son of Poseidon, and there's a great... What's interesting about it is you don't get everything, like, all up front.
Okay.
As you go through the story, you discover, like, Theseus... It is actually Theseus, but he is going by the name Joe Theseus. And he's trying to be very low profile about everything, but he's also kind of a bit of a gangster. And... because he's carrying with him the weight of all of the long history that has been handed down to us from the Greeks, and all of the tragedies and everything in his classical life. And he talks about it's so interwoven with the Greek pantheon, and at some point Poseidon basically bequeaths his immortality to Theseus.
Okay.
So every year he has to fly back to, like, Argentina or something. And at a low tide, Poseidon's skull is there in the tidal pools. And drinks the water from the eye sockets, and that is how he renews his immortality. And he winds up hooking up with the Eyeball Kid. The Eyeball Kid. He's the ten-eyed offspring of the hundred-eyed giant.
Okay.
Guarded, I think the apples of Hesperides, or I'm sure Kelly would be like, no, god damn it, you got it wrong.
Kelly's calling right now. It's like, I know what you're talking about. It's
probably her classical sense is tingling. Somebody's misrepresenting, because he can't remember the name of the damn hundred-eyed giant. He's not going to try to bother looking it up. But the Eyeball Kid was his son, who inadvertently winds up killing most of the Greek pantheon. And now he's hanging around on Earth as the Eyeball Kid.
Okay.
And he has the power of Zeus. He stole Zeus's thunder, and that's how he didn't know how to control it. And it's just a fascinating tale, and it's just a lot of fun. But the story centers around Bacchus just going around with this guy who had escaped one of the, from Tartarus.
Yeah.
He was like a dead guy. He was an accountant. He wound up in Tartarus. And then when the Eyeball Kid killed everybody, then all the dead were revived or something. I can't remember the exact dynamic. And so he just hangs around with this accountant. They go around all over the aisles, partying and drinking, and he's also trying to hunt down Theseus, because I think it was his Bacchus's daughter who he had slighted and left for dead or left pregnant, something like that. So he's held this 10,000-year-old grudge. And it's just a beautiful, fun piece of work. And, Bacchus is this grizzled old guy wearing a George R. R. Martin hat, formerly known as a Greek sailor's cap. his little vestigial horns. And it's just a neat, neat thing. And one of my favorite scenes is there's this gangster who is modeled on Don King, apparently.
Oh, really?
Spit an image and named Euthanasia. And finally, Joe Theseus goes to put him down. And he's got a little, one of those cases you put when you steal your daddy's pool and make a living out of playing, or your daddy's cue and make a living out of playing.
Yeah.
One of those little pool cue cases. And inside he's got, your classic Greek short swords.
Oh, like the Gladius type.
Yeah, and he's like, what you got there, Joe? Chicago Piano? Like, wow, Chicago Piano.
Haven't heard that term in a while. See, for me, this is going to come as no surprise, but it's the Egyptian spirit of God and spirit of vengeance, Khonshu.
Oh yes,
to which Moon Knight is the avatar. Sorry, what was that?
Oh, I was just saying, bless you.
Oh, you're. But
Sentai.
I love the idea, and the cool thing about when you get into Aztec or Egyptian gods is, for as little as known, I guess the Greeks, you know, because if you study the classics, you generally will study the Greek and Roman pantheon. But as little as known about the Norse pantheon, much less as really publicly known about the Egyptian and, let's say, the Aztec or the, you know, whatever African god system there are. So you have a little more leeway and not being called out on what you do. So the Khonshu godhead, you know, first of all, drove Mark Spector completely insane. You know, there's speculation as to whether he was crazy before, but I think it's pretty much been solidified that in meeting him and being resurrected, as it were, by this thing and to become this spirit of vengeance, driven absolutely bat crap, bug nuts.
So apparently, not only those the gods wish to destroy, but even those the gods wish to help. They first drive insane. The problem is the gods can't help but drive people insane.
There's no limiter. There's no way to.
Yeah, but they had it put forward, the destroying part, because if they let everything be known, then no one would ever, you know, let them in the door.
Right.
Which is powerfully ironic, because they're gods and should be able to just, you know, doors should mean nothing to them.
That's right. But what's really awesome about this is you get an exploration of, you know, because what we see in Wonder Woman or in Thor or in, you know, any of the other ones where gods regularly interact with man, you get the god shows up at your door, you know, and sometimes literally, like knock, 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 you know, or Odin shows up to visit.
Sort of like, you know, heaven knock, knock, knocking on the door.
On, yes.
Instead of knock, knock, knocking on heaven's door.
It's very nice. take this hammer from me. I don't need it anymore. That's
how what led to Thunderstrike, actually.
In some odd way, we could draw Bob Dylan back to Thunderstrike.
That's right.
Only on this show. But, you know, and then you get into this later, like, you get a lot of iterations there. You know, he doesn't really manifest himself during, like, the West Coast Avengers days when he was sort of the B-team, you know. Still loved him, but he was the B-team. He had different powers during different phases of the Moon. You know, there was a bunch of weird stuff that they did with Moon Knight. But as time goes on, you get this, you know, how do the gods choose to interact with man? And Khonshu chooses to interact with Mark Spector sort of like Stephen King's It interacts with all the kids of Derry. Like, he shows up like the cut-off face of the Bushmaster, or a weird, you know, bird skull in a white suit. Like, anything, any weird fear that you might, you know, this is the way he manifests himself. So it's not always this kind of happy, sane way of meeting people. You know, you don't look over on the subway and there's Zeus in a hobo's outfit like, I've got a mission for you.
That's true.
Like, a worm grows fangs and wings and flies up in your face with, you know, Merle Haggard's beard and tells you that, yeah, it can get real weird when we're talking about the gods, all right? Like, it can get real, real weird. That's all I'm saying. And that's why I don't think there's been an exploration of that as well as in any of the later, let's say, the last 20 years, 20 years of the Moon Knight comics.
Yeah.
Because it's not all happy-go-lucky. And it's also the idea that Moon Knight has many times tried to give up his avatar nature. He's tried to throw off that cloak of godliness and just be a, you know, a masked vigilante, just be a guy. But, you know, Khonshu keeps coming back and kind of whispering in his ear and saying, no, you're not giving me up, buddy. I'm right here, man. You can't walk away from this. I'm a part of you. And that's creepy and weird and a whole different exploration. So for me, it's Khonshu. For me.
That's a good one, because it's in its own way, almost bordering on the obscure.
Yeah. And insane. Yeah. And you don't get that. Like, Zeus.
I don't think it's beyond bordering when it comes to insane.
That's true. It's full
it's,
on.
It's crossed on in.
Yeah, it's eating people with a side of Chianti kind of insane. Yeah. talk to me, because this is more in your wheelhouse than it is mine, I think, though I do have, you know, more than passing knowledge on this. Why was there a necessity for a new gods?
I've aware of the new gods and kind of aware of that comic, but I've never really, it was never one that I followed, so
yeah.
I really don't have a great frame of reference either, but just speculating, and I'm sure there are those who are in the know who'd be happy to correct
Steve.
Me on this, that if you look historically at various pantheon,
right,
there is this sort of this prevailing theme that you do renew your old gods are cast out and replaced with new ones.
Mm-hmm.
It happens at an alarming rate in the classical mythology of the world, and we're powerless to stop it.
There's a lot of familia side going on.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Most well known to the West is, of course, the classical Near Eastern mythology. And the idea of Cronus and the Titans,
right,
being prophetically destroyed by the offspring that their patriarch tried to preemptively destroy,
right.
I'm trying to put as many big words.
You did a good job. I'm that was good, but
I'm trying to make up for some of the earlier errors.
But there's also the idea, I think this deserves some conversation, that the big comic book companies, now Image fantastically and notoriously ignores this, but the big two have steered away from the kind of Abrahamic Christian God. They've had angels and they've had demons, they've had devils, but they haven't had the devil, and they haven't had the God, because they're afraid of... The devil's a little different. You can get away with a lot with the devil, but...
Yeah, you can... You know, the devil, people are a little more forgiving, except in Oklahoma City, of any sort of depiction thereof.
Right.
And, you know, for the longest, you also weren't getting depictions of, like, say... the sort of India and Asian,
right,
pantheons, because that it was almost like a combination of far too obscure and and just sort of a sense of that was sort of, it always just seemed a little hands off.
Yeah, and I don't know whether that was because of obscurity.
Like, yeah,
you know. You do get some things like the Oni and stuff like that, but you don't really get like the full on pantheon of gods from the Asian the Asian countries at all. No, you're right. Yeah.
Yeah. In general, that's pretty well ignored, and it may be that there's just no one has a really good idea how to approach those characters, those mythos, and aren't willing to go. The Stan Lee approach, and I don't know anything about Norse gods, but I know enough to make this happen.
And I think that's your big difference there, because if you're Stan Lee and you don't know enough about the Norse gods or the Greek gods, you just don't care. You just go for it anyway.
You have to.
You're like, all right, Norse gods, we're gonna Thor. Yeah, let's do Thor.
Well, you factor
and,
in that,
Loki. Somebody tell me about that. Well, I think they were brothers, but they really didn't like each other. Go run with that. Run with that.
So, I read somewhere that
Odin had one eye and a raven. Put that in. Like the kid makes the picture, but on the DC side, they're like, well, we don't know enough about the gods, man. All right, let's just make new ones.
Yeah.
Like here's your new gods. They're kind of like the old ones. They're like new. They're like Crystal Pepsi.
I think it was literally the concept of the new gods was that they were literally the next generation, the next pantheon. And then of course there was the rift between the new gods and the dark side,
right?
And that bunch. But frankly, a lot of that Kirby stuff just I'm lost.
Well, I don't know how long I was out for there. I think I passed out for a second, but I'm back. It's interesting to me the necessity to create gods in a world that's already populated by gods.
Yeah.
what stories you, you know what I mean? What stories you're trying to tell?
I think, though, that that's rather part and parcel to this particular story arc, because what you're telling is those stories of, like, you know, if Superman comes to Earth and he finds out he's from Krypton, he's the last one and all that, but he's got all these powers and abilities, and he was thankfully raised in the company of humble, quiet farm people.
Right.
Then you have the story of being, of sort of attaining the Godhead. But with the presence of the gods, even though you have technically, you know, these characters with the power of gods, once you bring in the proper gods, for lack of a better term, you're able to explore that other dynamic is, you know, what drives, you know, what does God need with a starship? What does God need with Avengers Mansion?
Right.
What drives these gods, these characters, to bother to keep coming back? You know, so many of them will drop in, they'll have a little god war, or, you know, wreak some havoc or what have you, and then you hear no more of them.
Right.
And others decide they're going to take up residence, and, you know, you think, you know, watching the Americans, those are illegals. What about the people who weren't born even on Earth?
So who's going to tell them?
Yeah.
You know, that's the thing. Like, if the gods decide to slum it, who's going to tell them to leave?
That's true. But, you know, and then the world becomes a great big park bench for them, and they just kind of get, they just kind of stay here for good. So.
For millennia, if they choose.
Yeah, they can do whatever the hell they want, so it does become like, you know, the 900-pound gorilla.
Right. Marvel has a thing called the Council of the Godheads. Are you familiar
really?
With that?
Oh.
I was not familiar with it until I was doing research for this show. Essentially, what it is in times of great peril, and I don't know how great the peril has to be for this to happen, but they bring out all the and I always picture it, you know, since I've seen this, I picture it in my head as the dinner scene from Goodfellas. You know, like they bring out all of the heads of the gods.
All of their pantheon leaders or what have you.
Right, you get guys like Odin and Vishnu and Zeus and, you know, the your head rulers get together and hold council, which to me, what has to happen? You know, what's the speculation? Like, I guess the last time they got together was during the Infinity Gauntlet. Well, no, that's not the last time. They did get together. I guess the Infinity, when somebody's trying to claim the ability to warp everything in existence,
yeah,
including you, you're gonna have a little tête-à-tête about that.
That's true.
But the Secret Invasion was one. They got together because the Skrulls were coming to Earth. It seems a little paltry to involve every god. And where do we get off, by the way, as Earthlings, or beyond Earthlings? You know, your Superman or your, let's take the Avengers for instance. Where do the Avengers get off? Thor's the only one with a hall pass here. Where do you get off sticking your nose into god business? Where does Hawkeye get off, you know, sticking his nose into the business of the gods? Is what, you know, you weren't brought into it. Like, it's like the Kree-Skrull War. You know, you weren't brought into this. They didn't come to Hawkeye's house and ask him to be involved in the god war. Yet, there you are with your stupid little bow, fighting giants. What kind of hubris is that? Why is that there?
Who invited you to this party?
Exactly. Like, a lot of...
Also, you do see a kind of a godlike, this meeting of the minds of the gods with Kingdom Come.
Okay.
Where things are, you know, it's really hitting the fan, and you have this council of, like, Zeus and one of the, like, Ganthet or somebody, you know, some guardian. Phantom Stranger and a bunch of others.
Really?
And really, in many ways, I think, with the exception of Swamp Thing actually going physically or empirically, however it was, to heaven.
Yeah.
That was the only point where you really ever saw DC treading those waters. Because that is dangerous ground. Where, on the other hand, you have the completely irreverent and don't really care because they're going to make their money regardless. Over at Image, the infamous Savage Dragon.
And that's very. You know what's funny is the way that a comic company handles, you know, theology or theistic ideas really is a bellwether of the type of company they are.
Yeah.
Because Image set out to be this firebrand, this, you know, take no prisoners, young up and coming company.
Mm-hmm.
And the way that they handled the idea of a god, is now notorious for the talk with God story arc, in the Savage Dragon mythos.
Yes, well, and then the fisticuffs, as it were, between God and the devil was perhaps the most ill-conceived approach to Judeo-Christian theology as depicted in a comic book form.
It had to have been, right? Like, because that whole story arc, I mean, you had everybody from Hitler to everybody from Hitler to God, basically, yeah. You know, going a few rounds. I own it as a collected edition, and I'll be honest, from a comic reader's perspective, from somebody that appreciates comics as an art, I wanted to own it to own the controversy.
Yeah,
but it is a hard read. It is a hard because it is essentially just Flash. It is just shock value. There's not really much there to speak of as far as actual content. And have you read it?
No, I did. I did see the issue, the infamous "Don't F with God" issue, where the fist fight reached its conclusion.
It's not good. That's all I'm going to say. It's not a good comic book. It'd be different if, like, you know, one of our crazy-ass favorite comic book creators set out to make this. And it was Alan Moore's or Frank Miller's or you know, Grant Morrison's or somebody's like that, that actually put some thought and forbearance into what they were doing. But this isn't that. So maybe God should stay on the back burner when it comes to comics, because I think
I think that's safer. We're all happier,
right?
Because, you know, even if it was well written, it would still be kind of uncomfortable in a way.
Well, people would be even if it was in a vacuum.
Yeah,
you know, even if written and drawn and created in a vacuum, you then have to introduce that to the public, and that's when it becomes uncomfortable, because there's always backpedaling and two sides, and so maybe just keep them on the back burner there.
Yeah,
I think that's a good idea.
Best to work with the ones nobody cares about anymore.
That's right. Maybe it's best to make people invest in gods that they aren't aware of. So, where do we go from here? I mean,
I don't know that you could go, because I don't think anybody is really beyond just, you know, some event where someone is just so darn powerful that we, you know, the gods themselves begin to quake in their godly boots.
The only thing I can think of is the Celestials.
Yeah, or, you know, technically, I guess, when they retconned or finally gave you some kind of sense of where Galactus came from.
Yeah.
You know, I think that doesn't he technically predate all of existence?
In a
prior existence that was then when it, in its death throes, it coughed out Galactus.
Yeah, I think, like, in one form or another, the idea of a Galactus has always existed, the planet eater. And in his current form, of course, you know, you have to be humanoid with a weird Jack Kirby headpiece and, you know, giant go-go boots. But prior to that, you know, you get the idea that it's just always been there, constantly hungry and searching for worlds to eat.
Yeah, and it is. But I don't know if there's anywhere to go beyond that, because even the Celestials become, you know, in their own way, gods themselves.
Right.
Like, and, you know, they have the audacity to go around and seed the universe with genetic material and, you know, sort of dictate what's going to happen, you know, as far as, like, the Inhumans and things like that, and creating their soul gems and all these other
jerks.
Yeah. And it just seems like they're like the Trelane in Star Trek or something, sort of all-powerful, but perhaps not very well, you know, not a race that really thinks a lot of things through.
Right, there's no hubris in the Celestials. They don't, they're like, okay, yeah, we did that. No, You're lower than us. We can't intervene in the thing that we just caused to happen.
Yeah.
In a blink of an eye, we have created 800 existences. And
our bad.
Yeah. Right. Just come on. That's all we want is our bad. That's it. If you can muster at least
that much. No, they're not offering.
They're not offering. Oh man. Well, it's about time we start closing this thing up.
I think so.
I think it's hit its natural terminus point, and
no, those who arrive survive. No, wait, wrong.
Wait, what? No. So, why don't we plug it up and we'll get out of here and.
Absolutely. This is, of course, Hey Kids Comics coming to you through the Jedi Cole universe. Which is also the home of Hey Kids Comics Live on Deep Ellum on Air. So you can find Jedi Cole Universe at JediCole.com. You can find Deep Ellum on Air at DeepEllumOnAir.com, where you can see usually the second Saturday of every month. This month it'll be the third because of AllCon, the all-consuming AllCon.
the Galactus of Dallas.
Where we hope to have some new guests for our next show. We'll have a kind of post AllCon show coming up. You can find out about AllCon and other conventions, a full comprehensive annual listing at Convention Awareness Project Texas at cap-tx.info. And gosh, what all else have we got going on? We do now have a Twitter. @TheJediCole. You can write to us at jcumail@yahoo.com. We'd love for you to write to us.
Absolutely. Kelly, if you're listening, please write and tell us everything.
Yeah, tell us how wrong.
Yeah, and expect a lot of content and updates to come out of AllCon. We always have new ideas and new announcements and things like that are going to come out of this coming weekend. So fully expect that. If you are at AllCon, come see us, say hi, sit in on the panels, get involved. We would love to hear from you. We always like to hear from our listeners. So please, please do that.
Absolutely.
Because if it wasn't for you guys, it would just be too
it would
sad.
It would be sad. Less sad this way.
It is notably less sad.
Considerably less sad.
Right.
It's because of you. I know
you broke their hearts. What happened to them? All right, guys. Join us next week for an AllCon episode. And then, the following Hey Kids Comics Live. Thanks again for listening, everybody. They just try to keep you satisfied. It's the best of. Tell me. Who do you think you are? You're never gonna get my love. Then to be fooled around and get hurt by